Hi, welcome back to Joe Blogs. This episode is the next in a series looking at the financial implications of Russia's invasion of Ukraine on the global economy. And in today's episode, I want to talk about natural gas. Now, we've talked about natural gas a lot, but things are really starting to hot up. And in fact, it's really kicked off over the last couple of days. And it's now getting to the business end as to whether or not we are going to see Russia shut down the whole of the European gas supplies. So in this video, I'll talk you through exactly what's been happening. We'll look at who the main countries are that are dependent upon Russian gas. We'll talk about what happened with regards to the demand by President Putin to make payments in rubles and what the implications of that were for a couple of countries who've already had their supplies completely switched off. We'll then talk about what's been going on with Gazprom because they walked away from a lot of their overseas assets in April. We'll then look at what happened to those assets. We'll talk about what's going on in Ukraine right now because for the first time, we have seen Ukraine take some action against these pipelines. I fully expected at the start of this war that Ukraine would target the pipelines and try to shut them down or bomb them, but that hasn't happened. They've been preserved, but we're now seeing some action being taken, so we'll go through that. We'll have a look at what's happening with prices of natural gas in Europe because they have gone up quite dramatically over the last couple of days. And then we'll have a look at what one of the international banks is saying will happen if the supply is switched off, and it's quite a dramatic outcome for Europe. So before we get started on all of that, if I can ask you to give me a thumbs up at some point during this video if you're enjoying the content, and also please subscribe if you haven't done so already. And don't forget, I always include chapters in these videos, so if there's a section you're not that interested in, it's really easy to skip over it. And if you'd like to support the channel, please have a look in the description below, where you'll find a link to Buy Me a Coffee, Patreon, and YouTube Super Thanks feature. Russia is the world's largest exporter of natural gas, and historically it provided around 40% of all of the natural gas used in Europe. And that gas is provided to countries directly in the form of gas by pipelines. So that means that it's really efficient and it's really cheap for all of those countries to take it. So in the past, everybody's been very happy with that relationship. But even after the 2014 invasion of Crimea by Russia, everybody continued to take those supplies because it was simply the cheapest and easiest option. At the end of 2021, there was still a high degree of dependence on Russian gas. A lot of the Eastern European countries had more than 90% dependence. But the two countries that provided the most concern to the Western world in terms of their economic power that were taking a lot of gas from Russia were Germany and Italy, both of whom were taking more than 40%. When this war started on the 24th of February, all of the Western nations, including Germany and Italy, came out and made statements that they no longer wanted to do any business relationships with Russia. However, they continue to buy natural gas because from a logistical and a practical point of view, it is virtually impossible for them to be able to stop doing that overnight. Both Italy and Germany use natural gas to produce electricity, and they also pipe it directly to households for heating and cooking. So it's an integral part of the infrastructure in both of those countries. And as I mentioned a few minutes ago, because it's piped in directly from Russia, it means it's really convenient, easy to use, and low cost. The alternative supply option is to buy in liquefied natural gas. And liquefied natural gas has to be reduced to a liquid under pressure and then transported usually on the sea in big containers. And then you have to have a regasification plant. So you have to turn that liquid back into a gas before you can use it in your power stations and before you can pipe it into your households. So there are a number of practical issues in terms of switching the supply away from Russia towards the rest of the world. Firstly, you need to take delivery of all of that liquefied natural gas. So you need ports that are able to cope with the huge supply volumes. Then you need to have your regasification plant. And then you need to be able to pipe that gas directly to all of the places that you need it. So there's a lot of issues to contend with here. And there's also a lot of additional cost. Because if you compare the existing arrangement with that new arrangement, then it's going to be a lot more expensive. And that's why the price of gas has gone up, and particularly why there's been an increase in demand for liquefied natural gas. So the countries of Europe have really been between a rock and a hard place here. They want to walk away from the Russian energy supplies, but they don't really have the option of doing that because it's so difficult to be able to switch out the natural gas supplies. Now, President Putin's obviously fully aware of the situation, and he knows the leverage that he's got over a lot of these European countries. On the 31st of March, he came out and advised all unfriendly nations that all future payments for natural gas had to be made in rubles. And he did this for a couple of reasons. Firstly, the ruble was tanking in the international markets at the time. The value had fallen almost 50%, and he wanted to bring that value back. Now, at that point, nobody in the world was buying rubles because everybody had stopped doing trade with Russia, and therefore they didn't need the currency. So by bringing in this mechanism whereby all future energy payments had to be made in rubles, it created demand for the ruble. And Europe at that time was buying around $450 million worth of gas every single day. So that's a lot of demand for the ruble and is one of the reasons why the value of the ruble has recovered so quickly. But the other reason that President Putin made this statement is that he wanted to push the Western world in terms of their sanctions. So all of the unfriendly nations, as he was calling them, had sanctioned the Russian banks. But the Russian banks were the only entities who had rubles. So by making the Western world buy rubles, it was forcing them to deal with the Russian banks. Now, the initial response from the EU was that they would not be paying in rubles, and in fact, it was going to be a breach of contract because all of the existing contract arrangements in place stated that the payments had to be made in either euros or dollars. So in order to provide some form of compromise, President Putin then came back out and stated that the money could be sent in euros or dollars, and then it would be converted into rubles, and then those rubles would be used to pay Gazprom for the gas. So all of the countries were told that they had to authorise this transfer from euros or dollars into rubles. Now, two countries who have historical issues with Russia came out and stated that they would not be paying in rubles. They would continue paying in euros. And both of those countries, Poland and Bulgaria, have now had their gas supplies completely switched off. So this was a situation where President Putin's hand was called, and he really showed that he wasn't bluffing by switching off that supply. The EU still maintains that making those payments in rubles is a breach of contract, and it will be very interesting to see what happens with the next round of payments that are due very shortly. Gazprom is the Russian state-owned entity that controls all of the natural gas supplies. And the company has built extensive pipelines all across Europe and also has some storage facilities. The European operations of Gazprom outside of Russia are controlled by a 100% owned subsidiary called Gazprom Germania GmbH. And that company is registered in Germany and has a variety of subsidiary companies that are based in Switzerland, the United Kingdom, Germany and the Czech Republic. One of the most significant subsidiaries is called Astora, which employs 94 people and has storage facilities that can hold up to 6 billion cubic meters of natural gas underground in a variety of locations, the majority of which are in Germany. The next most significant subsidiary is called Gazprom Marketing and Trading and deals with all the contracts around all the natural gas. And that company is headquartered in London and has 834 employees. On the 1st of April, Gazprom announced that it was abandoning all of its external operations outside of Russia, which left Gazprom Germania in no man's land in terms of its management and funding of the business. 7 days later, Germany's energy network regulator announced that it would ensure that all of the operations of Gazprom Germania would remain trading and operating as usual. In a statement, the regulator said that all existing and future payments and obligations of the business would continue to be met. As Gazprom Germania owns the biggest single storage site for natural gas in Germany, it was essential that it continued trading, and the consequences of an insolvency for the energy supply system, not only in Germany but in Europe as well, would be severe, the regulator said. One of the technical issues for the German regulator is that they are not allowed to buy any assets outside of Germany without EU approval. And as they've now taken on some assets based in the Czech Republic for some of the storage, they're now waiting for the EU sanction for that, which obviously will be a formality, but just throws another spanner in the works in terms of the way all of this has been handled. On the 10th of May, the Ukraine authorities announced that they were closing down the flow of gas from one of the main pipelines that provides around one-third of all of the natural gas to Europe. GTSOU, which operates Ukraine's gas system, said it would stop shipments via one of the key routes, declaring a force majeure a clause invoked when a business is hit by something beyond its control. The chief executive of GTSOU advised that Russian occupying forces had started taking gas that was passing through the pipeline and sending it to two Russian-backed separatist regions in the country's east. So the accusation here is that the gas that is meant to be moving into Europe for sale to Germany and other countries is now being taken by the occupying Russian forces and being used to supply the cities that they are occupying. The pipeline in question, which has now been closed down, provides 32.6 million cubic meters of gas per day, which equates to around a third of all of the Russian gas that's sent to Europe. In terms of what the impact of this will be on the European supply, Gazprom have stated that it is now technically impossible for them to be able to shift the same amount of volume through the remaining pipelines. So this means that there will be a reduction in the amount of gas that it's physically possible to be able to supply to Europe. So this is the first time that we've seen any direct impact on gas supplies as a result of the fighting conflict. Ukraine is now accusing Russia of siphoning off gas for its own purposes and has therefore now closed down that pipeline. Up until now, Ukraine was happy to let the gas flow through the pipes into Europe because they were aware that it was needed by Europe. It will cause massive infrastructure problems in Europe if all of that gas supply is cut. But as soon as they started seeing any activity from the Russian troops trying to take that gas for their own purposes, they have closed this pipeline down. And it is potentially possible that we could see more of this happening. So even though countries may be wanting to buy the gas, it might be that it just isn't possible to be able to send it to those countries in the same volumes. We do have other pipelines such as the Nord Stream, which don't go through Ukraine, but there are a significant number of pipelines that do go through Ukraine, and there is a real risk now that all of those could be stopped. On the 12th of May, Russia announced that it was imposing sanctions on all former Gazprom subsidiaries. So the businesses that they'd walked away from at the start of April, which have now been taken on by the German energy regulator, have now all been sanctioned. And in addition to those sanctions, the section of the gas pipeline that runs through Poland onto Germany has now also been sanctioned. Gazprom said that it would no longer be able to export gas through Poland via the Yamal-Europe pipeline. The pipeline connects Russian gas fields in the Yamal Peninsula and Western Siberia with Poland and Germany through Belarus and has a 33 billion cubic meter capacity, which represents around one-sixth of all Russian gas exports to Europe. At the time that Poland had its supplies cut off, Russia issued a warning to Poland, stating that it would switch off the full supply if there was any evidence of Poland siphoning off gas for its own usage. Now, there's no accusation of that being made here, but over the last few weeks, the gas has stopped flowing through that pipeline anyway and has actually been going in the reverse direction, which has actually worked in Poland's favour given the fact that they've had their supply cut off from Russia and they've been able to use that pipeline to move gas in the opposite direction to actually import it from Europe into Poland to be able to fill their own capacity. As a direct result of all of this negative news, the price of natural gas in Europe has jumped 14%, and there are now concerns that we may see the price start to escalate even further. Analysts at Barclays Bank have warned that if we see a switching off of all of the Russian gas supplies, that they expect that that will have a negative 5% impact on European GDP, and that also they would see the value of the euro fall below parity with the US dollar for the first time ever. And that's a major concern because those natural gas supplies are used firstly for the creation of electricity, secondly, they're used by industry for all sorts of industrial purposes, and thirdly, it's used by households for heating and cooking. So we're moving now into the summer period in Europe, so the heating side of things is less vital, but electricity and industrial usage are absolutely key. So if we see a shutdown of the Russian gas supplies, it's unlikely that all of these countries in Europe will be able to put liquefied natural gas facilities in place in time, and therefore we will have shortages. Once the existing storage runs down, we are in serious difficulty. And some countries in Europe only have 10 or 20% of their storage facilities currently filled up. And that's one of the problems. And Russia knows that, and that's one of the reasons they're switching off these supplies. So what's the summary and conclusion today? Well, we've been talking about natural gas for a long time, for the last few months, and it's always been the biggest risk factor from the European perspective. Germany and Italy have huge exposure to those Russian gas supplies, and putting in place the replacement liquefied natural gas is going to take quite a lot of time and is going to involve a lot of infrastructure cost and investment cost, but also additional cost for all of the consumers, because it's more expensive to use liquefied natural gas than it is to use gas coming through a pipeline from Russia. But it now looks like those Russian supplies will be switched off at some point over the next few months. President Putin has been threatening to do this. He's been calling out the European countries. He's been asking them to pay in rubles, and he's been making threats that he will do this. And it now looks like it's starting to happen. The closing down of all of the Gazprom subsidiaries was the first sign that this was going to happen. Those subsidiaries were making a lot of profit for Russia, but as we've discussed before, this war isn't about profit. It's not about maximizing the revenues for Russia. It's about something entirely different. So the first step was closing down all of those overseas companies, walking away from them. And we've now seen the follow-up to that, where all of those companies have now been sanctioned. And following up on the closure of the Polish and Bulgarian supplies, we've now seen the pipeline that goes through Poland close down as well. So we're very much looking at a complete shutdown of all of these European supplies. The only question really is, when is it going to happen? How quickly will President Putin decide to turn the screw? He knows that Germany and Italy are in big trouble if he switches off that gas. They do have some storage, and they've been trying to build up those storage levels. And my guess here is that's why President Putin is switching this off now. He knows that they're trying to fill up all the capacity before the winter period. So he doesn't want that to happen. He wants them to start running down their supplies and then get to the point in the winter when they run out of gas, because it will take 18 months to 2 years to be able to get sufficient regasification plants in place to supply the amount of gas that both Italy and Germany needs on an ongoing basis. And my gut feel on all of this is that this war is likely to go on for the rest of 2022 and through the winter period into 2023. I think that's why he's trying to do what he's doing now, because he knows that the maximum pain on those countries affected will be inflicted in the winter period, when people need heating for their homes and when there's a bigger demand for electricity. So the war in Ukraine is now taking a new turn. It's becoming a war on energy. President Putin is withdrawing all of those gas supplies, and it's likely within the next couple of months that we could see all of the countries who are currently dependent on that natural gas needing to find alternative supplies. The race is on already. Germany and Italy are trying to put in place as much capacity as they can, but it's going to be very difficult. And there just isn't enough liquefied natural gas in the world to satisfy all the demand right now. If all of Europe needs to use liquefied natural gas tomorrow, then there's going to be a shortage. And that means that at some point in the near future, we are potentially looking at electricity shortages in those countries, because that gas is used to produce electricity. And if we have electricity shortages, that means that industry would not be able to operate at the same level, and that will reduce what's going on in the economy and therefore has a contracting impact. And this all is adding up towards the higher risk of a recession coming at some point during the rest of this year. If we start to see problems with electricity and energy supply, then that will firstly increase the price of those items, which has a feed through into the price of everything, but also it'll have an impact on capacity and the ability to produce the amount of output that we have right now. So both of those factors will be very negative for the global economy. So the bottom line in all of this is that it looks like Europe needs to find new ways of feeding its natural gas supplies. They're not going to be coming from Russia anytime soon. The Russian supply was by far the cheapest available in the market. So everybody's now going to have to switch to higher cost supplies, and potentially may have shortages as well. So this is a common theme we've been talking about over the last few months. but we could seriously be looking at much higher prices and blackouts and shortages at some point during 2022. So hopefully you've enjoyed the structure of what I've been talking about today. If you've liked what I've said, please give me a thumbs up and subscribe if you haven't done so already. Hey guys, just a really, really quick update on Joe Blogs 2. As it sits right now, we are at 3,950 watch hours. So we are now only 50 hours away from that magical 4,000 hour mark. So we're pretty much there. I still need to ask you to jump over and have a look at those videos just to get through that final hurdle. And then I'll be at the point where I can apply for monetization and we can start this experiment for real. So if you've been working on videos and concepts and ideas, it's now time to finalize that. Get your finished product and contact me, and then we can start working out the logistics of how we get these videos up onto the channel, and then hopefully we can start seeing some progress and build one of the new exciting channels on the YouTube network. So thanks for watching this particular part of the video, and thanks for watching this whole video all the way to the end. You're one of the hardcore. Thank you very much.